It is an honor to speak here, and after all these very strong speakers, I want to tell you about the problem I'm working on. I should say right at the start, I'm a student of Baruch Solel, and he's helping me out on this problem. Okay, so I'll explain what the problem is. This is the problem. We have a separable Hilbert space H, a von Neumann algebra M inside of B of H, and we have two commuting CP semigroups which have been defined all day long on M, okay, they commute. And the question is it possible to dilate C and C to a pair of commuting E semigroups on some larger von Neumann algebra? That's a problem. And it's not solved completely, but I feel good about that now after you explained that it's okay. But so under some assumptions, the answer is yes. And I'll show you what the assumptions are. Right, so we can skip this because we saw that a lot of times today. And I will remind just what a dilation is. So if you're given a semigroup parameterized by some other semigroup of CP maps on a von Neumann algebra, and E dilation is a triple, it's a alpha R and K, where K is a Hilbert space containing H, and R is inside B of K, and it contains M as a full corner, and alpha is an E semigroup, which I don't define what it is because this is 0 over S, that satisfies this. This is an E dilation. Now, if we have some kind of continuity in the S parameter, then we want the dilation, of course, to have the same kind of continuity. Other way. Okay, so maybe before this, I want to say that when I think about this problem, I get a lot of inspiration, not only me, from the classical dilation theory that involves a semigroup of contractions on a Hilbert space. This is Nagy and Foyard book. Where TS are all contractions, and one is looking for an isometric dilation of this semigroup. It's a semigroup V, which satisfies V is on a Hilbert space K containing H, and satisfies this. Contains, of course, here. And this is on H, V is on K, which is bigger. And in the classical case, for different kinds of S, there are different kinds of results. First of all, it's been shown that when S is N, there is a isometric dilation, and it's been generalized to R plus, and also to N squared. It is not, you cannot generalize it to NK, where K is bigger than 2. That's a strange fact. And it's just begging to be asked, can we generalize it also in the continuous direction and in the multidimensional direction? And this, I will need to refer to this once. This is also true. This is called this is Slosinski's theorem. Okay, so let's see. So of course, okay, so this result, there is an E dilation for a CP semigroup, a theorem. It's been touched upon by many researchers from different perspectives, by Bad and Skaide, Seleg, Mullen, Solel, and Alverson. And it says that if theta is a CP semigroup, that like we defined all day long, one parameter CP semigroup, then it has an E dilation. Okay, remarks about this. If it is unital, then the dilation is unital, like we want it to be. And if we, of course, there exists a minimal dilation, and if it's minimal, then it's unique. And now also for the case n squared, there is a theorem first proved by Bott for the case m equals b of h. and later by Sulel for general M, that if you have two commuting CP maps acting on a phonemic algebra, then the semigroup theta defined like that has an e-dilation. Here, if you start with two unital CP maps, you get a unital dilation, and also I don't think anyone expects there to be, but I didn't see a counterexample that of if you require it to be a minimal dilation, is it going to be unique? Probably not, from our experience with the classical dilation theory. So, okay, these two theorems I just talked about, one in the continuous case and one in the two-dimensional case, each one has its own difficulties, and I want to prove this over R plus 2 to the 2, and both kinds of difficulties arise. So to cope with all these difficulties that put together, I need to put to assume additional assumptions to solve the problem, and my two assumptions one is a strong commutativity, and the other is unitality. And under these two assumptions, we can see that we can show that the dilation exists. So this is our main result. If you're given two strongly commuting, I didn't explain what that means, but of course they have to commute, but a little bit more than that. If we are given two strongly commuting CP0 semigroups on M, then that semigroup has an E0 dilation. I'm happy with the fact that we assume unitality and we also get unitality. So the proof, the rest of my talk, I'm going to talk about the proof. I'm not going to go through all the details. But it's based on Muley and Soler's approach to dilation, and we'll just discuss the case where M is B of H, because that contains most of the essence of it. Okay, so here is a toy example. Assume that you have two contractive semigroups which commute on a Hilbert space H, and on B of H you define two commuting CP semigroups like that, phi and psi, by conjugation. Now, it's true that phi and psi are E semigroups if and only if T and S are isometry semigroups. So if you want to dilate this to an isometry, to a E semigroup, you want to dilate T and S to isometry semigroups. So how this is done? You let V and U be the Slosinski isometric dilation of T and S. That's what I talked about, this dilation that exists over R plus to the 2. And then you get the E dilation. So usually a two-parameter CP semigroup or two CP semigroups will not be given by this simple formula, but this is really the heart of the matter. And we are trying to imitate this situation, and then we can try to do the dilation. Okay, so I'll tell you what the Muley and Soler strategy for dilation is. I don't think they call it that, but that's what they do in the R plus case and what Soler does in the N squared case. So you're giving a semigroup S and a CP semigroup parameterized by S on B of H. The first step is to construct a product system and a product system representation of X on H, the original Hilbert space, that represents theta like this. This should remind of the simple form that we had in the previous slide. The second step is to dilate T, which is a product system representation, to an isometric representation. This should remind that we dilated the contraction semigroups to isometric semigroups. And the third step is also contains a lot of work, but you just have to check that this if you define f like this, you define it on B of k. K comes from the dilation V of t. Then this is really the dilation of theta that you are looking for. Okay, so let's talk about step one. I must tell you what a product system representation is. I don't remember that talked about it too much today. So E is a Hilbert space. Generally, if M is not B of H, it's going to be a correspondence, but never mind. And completely contractive representation, which is a little bit of an exaggeration because it's just a contraction, is a linear, completely contractive map T from E to B of H. We denote by E tensor H the usual tensor product of spaces, and then you define T tilde to be this. So product systems are, we talked about that today, and the product system representation is a family of completely contractive representations that respects also the multiplication in the product system. So the way we define the product system representation in the strongly commuting case, we take the Mullion-Solel construction. For R plus, we have a product system E that goes with C. We have a product system F that goes with C. We have the representations which represent them. And we just tender these two product systems together. That's the only thing you can think of to do. And we define the representation also as the only thing you can define it to be. And now it takes a little bit of work, but the assumption of strong commutativity allows you to show that this is really becomes an associative product system. The main point here is to show associativity, and for this I need the strong commutativity. It was important for me to show you where this assumption comes in. I will, at the end of the talk, I will show you examples of strong commutativity, and I will explain what it is in B of H. Okay. So now we're in step two because we've constructed the product system representation, which gives you the CP semigroups. Okay, so what we constructed before satisfies this. We have a representation for our two-parameter CP semigroup. And if T tilde is isometric, then the CP semigroup is actually an E semigroup. And if it's co-isometric, then it's unital. That's easy to see. So we make these definitions. An isometric representation is one in which the tilde here is an isometry for all S, and a fully co-isometric representation is one in which the tilde is a co-isometry. And it's natural. Now that we have this, we want to dilate T to an isometric representation, and then things will be multiplicated, you see, because if the star here and here, then they cancel, and it's multiplicative. So we have this main theorem here for step two, the dilation of the product system representation. Okay, so this is the theorem. Let X be a product system over R plus K. It can be a little bit more general, but never mind. And let T be a fully co-isometric representation of X on H. Then there exists a Hilbert space larger than H, K, and a fully co-isometric and isometric representation Z of X on K, which satisfies this. One, forget about two. That's not the main thing, but one which reminds you of exactly what dilation means in the classical case. And this is where we use the unitality assumptions, where they have to be CP0 semigroups, because when our semigroups are unital, then the representation is fully co-isometric. So I want to show you how this theorem is proved. Right, we're in a theorem inside a theorem. I remind you, the main theorem is the dilation of CP semigroups. So this is the idea of the proof. I will give it. The idea here is to take the representation of product systems, which in general looks like a more complicated thing. It as a particular example, it contains semigroups on Hilbert spaces. So the idea is to take a representation of a product system and to reduce the problem to the problem of semigroup on a Hilbert space. So we want to reduce the dilation theory for product system representations to classical dilation theory. So we define a Hilbert space like this. It's a direct sum of all these spaces. X, I remind you, is the product system reconstructed, and T was a product system representation. We define a family of operators on H. These are just simple operators like this. In the zero, it's one. We want it to be a semigroup. It's zero, TS on this delta T, XT, this means that this is all the element over here where you have T in XS. Okay, that's just the notation. You can consider this a space of finitely supported functions, yes? That's where the delta T notation comes from. And this is the main point, that when you act on a tensor, on a vector here, which is an XT tensor H by TS, and TS is smaller, S is smaller than T, then this is how it acts. We want T hat to reflect the action of T. So we define it like this, and T hat turns out to be a semigroup of co-isometries on H. Okay, so now we can use classical dilation theory, and it's a theorem that T hat has a minimal isometric dilation Z hat on some Hilbert space K, squiggly K, containing squiggly H. It's not the same H that we were acting on in the beginning, that satisfies this. This should remind whoever knows this notion of a regular dilation. It's not exactly, because here the star is on the left side, and here the star is on the right side. The main point here is that we have, this formula will allow us to compute inner products inside our new Hilbert space K, and that's very important, because we can define here everything, but to show that things are really well defined, you need to know how to compute the inner products in these spaces that you define. So now we define the space K. This is the final K that will be the K dilating H. In the original theorem, this is our space K. And we define a representation V of X on K. We want to use V hat, because we have V hat. So V on XT is defined to be, on typical elements of the space K, the only thing you know to do with X is to tensor it with the thing you already have, so you tensor it. And what you know to do with the V is to multiply it with the V hat that you already have in your hand. So this is the definition. I'll give you 2 seconds to look at it. And, okay, V is well-defined, covariant, fully coisometric, isometric, product system representation. Actually, covariant is not needed here, because we forget about that. And I see that you're all very tired, so we're not going to walk through all these equations. But you know, some of you may want to look at this. It works. It's very nice how it works in the end. You'd like to see this. This is very nice. You see, when you restrict VS to an element H, well, we identify H as the X0 tensor H in our Hilbert space squiggly H. So this is just H. Okay? But then we know what VSX does to typical tensors. It just tensors the X and gives you the V hat instead. But now, because H squiggly contains the straight H, you can push here inside this projection on P of H. But V hat was a dilation of T hat. So we get T hat. And T hat was defined exactly to give you this thing. So you get TS of X of H. And that's the thing. And all the other things work as well. So we did the two first steps. We constructed a product system, X of correspondence, and a representation that gives us back our two community semigroups like this. The second step, we constructed isometric dilation V of T on a larger Hilbert space K containing H. Right, maybe I should have said that the proof of the theorem ended, if you lost me, of the isometric dilation. And now we're in step three. We have to put the pieces together, and step three is very short because it ends here. We just define alpha to be this for all B in B of K, and alpha is really a dilation of C and psi, and it's continuous in the way you want it to be, and even more after you check it. And another nice feature is that if you start with B of H, you end up, the larger von Neumann algebra on which you dilate ends up to be B of K. So you don't get a more complicated von Neumann algebra. And it's unitary, and that's the end of the theorem. Okay. So now what I owe you, you know what unitary means. I have to tell you what strong commutativity means, at least in the case B of H, for which we proved the theorem right now. So this is a long definition. Forget about the long definition, but strong commutativity in B of H. So, of course, if we want, when do we say that two contraction semigroups commute? We say that contraction semigroups TT and ST commute if T sub T and S sub S commute for every T and S. So we say that two CP0 semigroups strongly commute if theta sub T and psi sub S strongly commute for each T and S. And I have to tell you only what it means for two CP maps to strongly commute. Okay? That's okay? So if you have, so this is characterization of commuting, strongly commuting CP maps on B of H. Every CP map on B of H is given by, yeah, CP I mean also normal, is given by such a formula. There is an n-tuple or an n-tuple which might be infinite, n might be infinity, that gives you this like this. And you can also find a representation of this where the TIs and the FJs, they're L2 independent. Okay? That means that they're linearly independent. So these two semigroups strongly commute if and only for it, and only if there is an m times n unitary matrix that satisfies this commutation relation. Okay, so if you've never seen this sort of relation before, it might take a minute to grasp, but shortly, if you have Ti and Sj commuting for every I and j, for instance, then you have strong commutativity. And if you can't represent the semigroups like this, then they don't strongly commute. And there are examples of CP maps that don't strongly commute. So to show you an example, the simplest example I know of, I'm going to explain to you what strong commutativity means in a different setting. So let's consider the von Neumann algebra MC to the N, and H is C to the N. And by the way, this is the last slide, okay? And M is acting on H as diagonal operators. So a unitary CP map is just a stochastic matrix, okay, a matrix with positive elements with the rows summing up to 1. And two matrices, which we can consider P and Q, which are also two CP maps on this space, they strongly commute, right, because their vectors, the maps, just multiply them in the ordinary sense. They strongly commute if and only if for all I and K, this equality holds, where the straight bar means cardinality. Okay, because we can take also L infinity instead of Cn, so it's the cardinality of the set. If this cardinality is equal, then they strongly commute. So you can see that if P and Q are positive matrices, pointwise positive matrices in the matrix theory sense, then they strongly commute and everything okay. Here is an example for two matrices that commute, but not strongly. You can check it. And I will just say one last thing, that if one of you has ever seen it, have you seen this before? I would love to know if there is something, that this could be attached to it. Okay, thank you very much for listening. That's it.